yesterday's special legislative session. When Governor Janet Mills called the Maine legislature into special session, she hoped that lawmakers would easily pass legislation, putting four new bond measures on the November ballot. That didn't happen. Republicans blocked three bond measures. That means the November ballot will not contain bonds for land conservation, improvements to National Guard armories, or expansion of broadband. Voters will only decide one transportation bond. And that's not all that happened yesterday. At a late hour, Democrats enacted a measure expanding ranked choice voting to presidential primaries. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we cut through the political spin with Maine Public senior political correspondent Mal Leary. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It was a day of finger-pointing and partisan warfare in Augusta yesterday as the legislature met for a special session to take up bond measures. In the end, only one made it through, as well as a controversial measure to expand ranked choice voting. Joining me from our Augusta studio to explain what happened and didn't happen, Mal Leary, Maine Public senior state house reporter. Hi, Mal. Welcome back.
Hello, Jennifer.
As always, we want to hear from you. What is your reaction to yesterday's special session? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send us a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post the Maine Calling Facebook page. Mal, we so appreciate you being here. I know it was a late night for you. Yesterday didn't go as most people expected it to, did it?
It did not. Of course, the governor had a package of four bonds that she wanted on the ballot in November, and she got just one of them. That's the transportation bond, which is the largest of the bond proposals. It's $105 million. It not only applies to upgrading roads and bridges, but also ports, rails, air transportation, repairing culverts, fishing wharfs. It's a much broader bond, and it will bring in something on the order of $135, $137 million in matching funds. So she got the biggest bond of the package, but the other three, which included a lot of various projects that are popular, Jennifer, with members of both parties, went down to defeat because Republicans said they felt that the economy is not as good as it could be going forward. And they couple that with the fact that the governor has spent, in their words, just about every cent that's coming in projected revenue on programs instead of keeping more in reserve than they would like. So they blocked the other three bonds.
So the other three bonds, one would have expanded broadband in rural areas. Another of those bonds would protect more conservation land. And a third would do infrastructure projects, including helping out National Guard armories. The governor, as you mentioned, was not happy that three of the bond measures did not make it through the legislature. Let's hear what she had to say at a news conference afterwards.
The people are going to know who was on their side. And the people are going to know who wasn't on their side and who said, we don't know, we don't have a proposal, we just don't know, we just want to say no. I'm sorry that it's come to this. I'm kind of sorry I called them in. Of course, we all want roads and bridges and culverts repaired, replaced. But there are so many other dire, time-sensitive capital needs that this state must have. And the Republicans have said no.
Mal, Governor Mills came into office talking about being bipartisan. Is this the end of that?
Well, if you talk to the Republican leaders, they're a little bit perturbed with the governor saying that while she reached out and spoke with some, if you will, rank and file members of the Republican Party, they weren't consulted on this package. I had a couple of them tell me flatly they could have gone for some of these proposals if they'd been scaled back even further. Of course, the governor points out she did scale back her proposal significantly to a total amount of $163 million. But that wasn't good enough for them. And they're just, for some reason, And I can't find out exactly who's to blame here. There was a lack of communication between the Republican leadership and the governor, and it resulted in this, at times, rather contentious special session.
Okay, Mel, I want to ask you about the other, many things happened yesterday, but another 11th hour move was the enactment by both houses of an expansion of ranked choice voting. Explain to me, this will expand, if the governor passes it, this would expand ranked choice voting to presidential primaries, also to the general presidential election or not?
That's correct. I need to correct you, though, that the House did not act on it yesterday. The House actually passed this back in June.
Okay.
Before they adjourned. The Senate then put it on the table. And it was carried forward, if you recall, at the end of the first regular session. They carried over, good Lord, hundreds of bills, including this one. So this was on the calendar as having failed of enactment before in the Senate, but it had enacted in the House. And this is where you get into this contentiousness that was going on. Troy Jackson had told Republican legislative leaders he wasn't going to bring the bill up, even though it was his bill, because he was going to go with what the governor said, just deal with bonds. Then the Republicans told him, well, we're not going to go for three of the four bonds. And Troy Jackson then said, well, then maybe I'll bring this up, and he did. So this was passed like with just minutes, maybe a half hour or so to go before the session ended last night. And it is a sweeping piece of legislation in that it's going to have a lot of ramifications for some of the Democratic candidates. For example, let's say, you know, we got, what now, 10 or 12 that are, quote, viable Democratic candidates for president. Let's say four or five are on the ballot in Maine. That means the person that gets the most votes the first time in the primary may not end up winning it. It may well be someone who gets more second and third place votes down the line as ranked choice voting kicks in. The same process will be repeated in the fall in the general election, but it will be done a little bit differently since we elect, of course, the president by the Electoral College. The ranked choice voting will actually apply to the electors that are on the ballot, so that when you go in and you vote, say, for Donald Trump, you're not voting for Donald Trump. You're voting for the people that are there as his electors that will then cast their ballot. So there's some sweeping changes here, both in the primary and in the general election, depending on how many people are on the ballot.
And as we speak now at 1:13 in the afternoon on Tuesday, we don't know yet if Governor Mills is going to sign this legislation.
We do not know that whether she is going to sign it. She has supported ranked choice voting. The questions around this, maybe she just wants to hold this until they come back in January. That's a number of bills are being held that way. If she vetoes it, then the legislature would have to bring themselves back in to handle the veto. And I think that the veto would be sustained because of the Republican opposition to ranked choice voting. And of course, the other issue here that has to be resolved at some point is that the bill that was passed last night has no money on it. And it's estimated to cost about $100,000 to do ranked choice in the presidential contest. So where's that money coming from? Well, when Troy Jackson brought it off, he's off the table and voted for it. He said that what is going to happen is the Secretary of State says he can absorb that cost within existing resources, and therefore there doesn't need to be a price tag on the bill with an appropriation. We will have to see what the governor decides about that, and whether she will go along with that or whether she will decide, hey, maybe I'll just hold the bill and see if they can come up with the money to fund it in January.
On the line with us now is Democratic Representative Matt Moonen, who is House Majority Leader. Representative Moonen, thanks for giving us a call.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What's your reaction to yesterday's special session?
You know, it was a really long day when ultimately only two bills got passed. So it was disappointing to spend that much time and energy on unfortunately the Republicans killing a lot of bills at the last minute.
What happens next to those bond measures that didn't make it onto the November ballot? Is this the end?
No. We typically have a bond conversation every year. And, you know, we have in the budget that was passed, the biennial budget that was passed in June, there's debt service for approximately $300 million worth of bonding. So the one transportation bond that was passed yesterday falls far short of that. So there is plenty of money in the budget still for additional bonding going forward.
All right, Mal, before we say goodbye to Representative Moonen, do you have any questions for him?
Matt, do you think that you're going to have a repeat of this come January, where the Republicans are going to continue to say, oh, we can't go with such a large, quote-unquote, bond issue, and we go through this whole mechanism again of trying to come up with a package they will vote for?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a possibility. They seem to have it in their minds that spending is too high. You know, the budget passed with more than two-thirds support in both chambers. There's still a revenue surplus even after all of that. So, you know, I think it's possible we could have the same conversation again, and they could kill all the bonds again next year. You know, I think the opportunity for us at that point becomes, you know, there would still be all of this money in the budget that was set aside for debt service. And if we're not actually bonding, then we can take that money and move it somewhere else that's a priority for us. So.
Well, Representative Moonen, thank you so much for giving us a call. That's Matt Moonen. He is the House Majority Leader. Now we're going to move on to Jacob Posnick, who's calling in from the Maine Heritage Policy Center, where he is Director of Communications. Jake, thanks for calling in.
Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Jake, what is the Maine Heritage Policy Center's reaction to yesterday's special session?
I think lawmakers mostly got it right. We weren't pleased with the vote to expand the use of ranked choice voting to presidential primaries. But to your point at the top of the program, I think that came as a result of some of the divisiveness that we saw yesterday. I think yesterday was one of the first times in the Mills administration where people showed up to Augusta and didn't exactly know what was going to go on over the course of the day. The Democrats had signaled that they were pretty confident that all four bonds would be passed. And then over the course of the day, the Republicans voted them down. And then, as you mentioned, right towards the end of the night, they decided to pass the RCV bill. So it was the first session wasn't totally kumbaya. There were some squabbles over the biennial budget. But for the most part, the divisive rhetoric had been toned down. And yesterday was the exact opposite of that.
You know, we know very well that our former governor, Paula Page, was very uncomfortable with most bonding. But Governor Mills made the point in her news conference yesterday that since interest rates are so low right now, if we're going to borrow, this is the ideal time. And that to wait could cost taxpayers millions of dollars if interest rates go up. What's your response to that?
Well, interest rates are certainly low right now. I won't contend that. I think the real point here is that this is borrowed money. This is something that we're going to have to pay interest on in the future. And so if these are long-term investments we're going to make and they're real priorities, we should probably think about finding ways to get these items in our traditional budget. Since 1980, I know it was 40 years or so ago, but $604 million the state has spent to pay interest on general obligation bonding. When it comes to transportation bonding, we've spent $206 million on interest alone. When you consider the principal amount that we have borrowed since 1980, the state of Maine has borrowed, taxpayer dollars have been used on $3.4 billion in borrowing in the last 40 years. And if you think about that figure, the interest on the general obligation bonds and the interest on the transportation bonds, that's a total of $810 million that we've spent in the last 40 years on interest. And if you want to equate that to the personal level, that's enough for a $600 payment to every single Maine taxpayer. So I think we need to, if these are our real priorities that we want to pay for, I think we should find a way to get them in our biennial budget and reduce the amount of money that we're borrowing each year.
All right. Well, Jake, thank you so much for joining us today. Jacob Posnick, the Director of Communications for the Maine Heritage Policy Center. After our first break, we'll hear from Garrett Martin with the Maine Center for Economic Policy. But back to you, Mal. I want to ask about the whole idea of a special session. It is not a given, is it, that we'll have a special session? And this idea that we'll bring lawmakers back to consider bond measures, this is not necessarily the usual way of doing business in Augusta, is it?
If you have to look back for a couple of decades, actually, to look at the whole process of the special session and how it's evolved. It used to be there was one session of the legislature every 2 years. They would come in January, finish up in June, and they wouldn't be back. Well, there always seemed to be things that had to be done, budget adjustments that had to be made. So there was a special session every year to kind of fill in that gap. And finally, the legislature decided, you know, this is ridiculous. We always have to come in for a special session to do adjustments to the budget, to handle some emergency measures. So let's just have a second regular session. So the Constitution was changed. We went to two regular sessions, one shorter than the other. That still didn't meet the need of handling emergency situations. And every single governor that I've covered over the years has had to call at least one or two special sessions to deal with some sort of problem. Now, in this case, what we were dealing with basically is the fact that the legislature did not complete work on bonds before they adjourned that first regular session. Well, the Department of Transportation was really between the rock and the hard place here. If this bond issue is not approved by the voters in November, half of the road repair projects next year will be canceled. Now, if you don't put it on the ballot, you don't even have the opportunity for the voters to approve it. So that's why it was this emergency that you had to deal with that. Now, these other priorities of Governor Mills and of the Democrats, things like the broadband, wastewater infrastructure, weatherization funding, were all part of what she wanted to get accomplished. And she put it into a bond package. Well, the first bond package was much larger and just went nowhere in those closing few days of the regular session. And that's why we were in special session, principally to deal with that issue.
All right. Well, that is senior political correspondent Mal Leary. We're talking about yesterday's special session of the legislature. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Dean's Sweets, now in two Portland locations, celebrating 15 years of specializing in hand-dipped truffles, caramels, buttercreams, and other seasonal chocolates. AARP Maine, working to lower prescription drug costs. Learn more at aarp.org/rx. And St. Lawrence Arts, where you can see it, hear it, and experience it live on Portland's Munjoy Hill. stlawrencearts.org.
The man who ran over and killed Heather Heyer at the 2017 Charlottesville rally is going to prison for life. Now activists hope to punish those who organized the rally.
They talked about which weapons to bring, cracking skulls, and even whether they could claim self-defense if they drove cars into protesters, which is, of course, exactly what happened.
That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is this afternoon between 4 and 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Yes, there is an app for that, for those of you counting on public radio. The Maine Public app allows you to take Maine Public Radio and Classical along with you anywhere and anytime. Stream Maine Public Radio or Classical, or just catch up on the news. The Maine Public app is available for both Apple and Android smartphones and tablets. And it also gives you access to many PBS and Maine Public Television programs. You can easily find the Maine Public app in both the Apple App Store and in the Google Play Store, and it's free.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are discussing yesterday's special legislative session. Joining me from our Augusta studio is Maine Public's senior State House reporter, Mal Leary. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now is Garrett Martin, who is Executive Director of the Maine Center for Economic Policy. Garrett, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer.
Ask you what I asked the others. What's your reaction to yesterday's special session?
Well, you know, enacting the transportation bond was certainly a smart choice by the legislature. But unfortunately, I would say that rejecting the other bonds in the package is really a missed opportunity for all of us here in the state.
Does the Maine Center for Economic Policy generally favor the issuance of bonds or only sometimes?
I would say in general, yes. You know, the reality, Jennifer, is that any of us who currently enjoy a strong economy, enjoy the roads and bridges that we drive on day in and day out, enjoy some of the other buildings and wastewater treatment facilities that exist in our state, we do so because of investments that were made by those who came before us. And, you know, we have an obligation in some respects to make sure that we are good stewards of those investments by maintaining those structures and assuring that not only current Mainers benefit from sound roads and bridges and water treatment systems and even access to new things like broadband infrastructure, but that future generations of Mainers will have similar opportunity to grow their businesses and provide for their families and meet their needs through the provision of solid infrastructure. And that's exactly why bonding makes sense, because it is something that benefits us now and it benefits people in the future, and therefore it makes perfect sense to sort of pay for those things over time in the way that we do through bonding.
All right. Well, Garrett, thank you so much for calling in today. Garrett Martin, Executive Director of the Maine Center for Economic Policy. Mal, before we move on to the rest of the calls coming in, I want to ask you about another measure that's gotten a lot of attention and for good reason. This is for how we pay nursing home workers in Maine. Most people believe it's too little. It was bumped up temporarily. What is going on with that?
Well, that's a very interesting issue. In the previous legislative session, they passed an increase for the workers in these nursing homes. But in typical fashion of the legislature, they put a sunset on it. That sunset was July 1st of this year. So during the legislative session, a bill was put together, again, sponsored by Troy Jackson, the Democratic president of the Senate, with bipartisan support to provide another $1.4 million to continue that pay raise that has already been given. And that bill was held by the governor in this wonderful situation we have at the end of the session, where when they leave, she doesn't necessarily have to veto every bill or sign it. She can also just let it sit until they come back into the second regular session. That's what she's decided to do with this, because there's a fear in the Department of Health and Human Services that this would have resulted in going in violation of federal rules that set a cap on how much money can be put into the nursing homes by the state. So they were saying, look, we can't do this right now. We need to wait. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle were saying, well, really, why can't we do it now? So they were trying to fix the bill, and there was a two-thirds vote in both branches yesterday late in the afternoon to withdraw that bill from the governor's desk and deal with it. But then again, they decided not to do that. And the result was that we have kind of a limbo land going on now, where we don't know what the governor's going to do with this bill that is sitting there, whether she's going to actually send it to the legislature, which, of course, they can't act on because they're not in session right now. So it's one of those classic kind of foul-ups that occur in when you apply all of these rules of legislative procedure to a particular issue.
Does that mean that nursing home workers are now seeing their paychecks smaller than they were at the beginning of the summer, and that their pay has gone down back to sort of 2018 levels?
That's correct. Mm. In many cases, that has happened. Now, the reality is, in some nursing homes, the nursing homes themselves are trying to mitigate that somewhat, but the money coming from the state went down.
We have two related comments here. First is an email from Pam. It is my understanding that the expansion of broadband in Maine is critical for economic growth and the delivery of health services. Why wouldn't the legislature support such a bond being given our demographics and need? I'm shocked. Please explain their thinking. And another from Elaine on Facebook, against expanding broadband access to rural areas? Seriously? I want names.
Well, in the case of names, I suggest that the person look up the roll call vote in the House and Senate, and she will find those names, or he will find those names very quickly. One of the problems with this proposal goes back to this general feeling that the Republicans had of spending too much money. The reality is there were bills in to expand broadband from members of both parties. It had bipartisan support. But the way you bundle these things together, that particular bond was $15 million for high-speed internet, but it also had money in there for the career and technical education centers and money to modernize National Guard facilities. So you had to vote for those three things together. And that was one of the things the Republicans were objecting to, saying priorities weren't really set in this. Now, as to the comment that broadband is needed, I think that's absolutely true. We've had several studies that show that. And I think you will see another attempt in the January session to come up with a high-speed internet access bond for rural Maine that will go to the voters next June.
We're going to go to Matt, who's calling from Bath. Hi, Matt. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer and Mao. Thanks for the legislative update. This is very informative. The bill I've been closely following is ranked choice voting for federal elections, and I am pumped that we might have the opportunity to vote ranked choice for the primary. And so what this means is we'll have the opportunity to vote for a candidate that might be our favorite, but a long shot, for me, Tulsi Gabbard, and we won't be throwing away a vote. So I'm extremely proud of Maine for leading on this, and thank you all for everybody who was involved in pushing this forward. Huge win for democracy, and this is a bipartisan thing. Hopefully Janet Mills is hearing us and will sign it right away. Thank you.
Thoughts, Mal?
Well, I think that I know that the governor does support ranked choice voting, but she hasn't decided yet whether she wants to sign it now or later. She doesn't have to sign now. She can wait until 3 days after the regular session, second regular session, convenes. And there's also, I think, the whole question of how you pay for this. I'm not sure that Matt Dunlap is all that happy about having to find $100,000 from within his budget to pay for this, and that's what he has to do right now if this becomes law without some funding source.
Matt, thank you for your call. A tweet from State Treasurer Henry Beck. Henry writes, "This is an issuer's market. Had a fuller package been sent to voters and was then approved this November, my office could have moved pricing periods as early as February to possibly take advantage if conditions remain positive." Thank you for that. We'll move to another Henry, this one calling from Canaan. Hi, Henry. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I wanted to make a comment to the Heritage individual there who talked about interest being such a big thing. Concrete in the last 20 years probably went up 100%. Pavement went up more than that. Steel went up. Wages went up. Equipment doubled. So it's sometimes cheaper to pay 1.5% or so on a loan. Maybe much cheaper. Thank you.
All right. Well, Henry, thank you so much for calling in to Maine Calling. And Henry calling in from Canaan there. We're joined now by Maria Fuentes, who is Executive Director of the Maine Better Transportation Association. Maria, thanks for calling in.
Well, thanks for having me.
Talk to me about the transportation bond. If it passes in November, is it nearly enough?
It's not nearly enough, but we are certainly grateful that on this particular bond, the legislature could agree that it was, in fact, something that was critically needed for every corner of the state. But no, it's not enough. We have, as a state, and we're not the only state for sure, we are spending far less on our transportation system than we should be spending. But the reason that the bond was so important is because it the state needs cash in order to leverage up to $200 million in federal funds. So those federal funds would have been at risk if there was no bond, largely because Maine DOT is so constrained in its finances that it just doesn't have, that flavor of money, cash, in order to leverage those funds. And it's not even just the federal funds, because also contained in this and in past bond issues are projects that require matching private funds or matching local funds. For instance, one of the very popular programs is a municipal partnership initiative where towns can compete for state money provided they're able to match it. So certainly it's more helpful to some of the larger towns and cities, because some of the more rural ones are not able to come up with that match. But there are also multimodal programs such as the Small Harbor Improvement Program, the Industrial Rail Access Program, that depends on local or private matches. So again, we're very relieved that the legislature was able to come together on this, and the bond does include $85 million for highway and bridge projects, another $15 million for multimodal, then there's money for culverts in there, as well as $1 million for the Gulf of Maine Research Aquarium, the pier.
Maria, since we are lucky enough to have you on the line, I'm going to put to you an email from one of our listeners. This is from Tim. He writes, what sort of public transit and particularly alternatives to rubber on asphalt are included in the transportation bond?
Well, the $15 million will leverage, I'm not sure how much, if they really want to see projects, what they should do is look at the Maine DOT's webpage and look at their three-year capital work plan, because it has projects by not only by region, but also by type. And so there is transit money, capital, transit money that the different regional transit groups need in order to update their fleet. There's money in there for marine projects. Like I said, the Small Harbor Improvement Program, which is more for freight. But there's also the state money that's required to match federal aviation funds. So in terms of on roads, the biggest thing would be transit buses. But again, this is a bond that hits every mode of transportation. And I know certainly that the folks who commute or who recreate by bicycle or a pedestrian have been very supportive of these bonds as well.
All right. Well, Maria, thanks so much for giving us a call. That's Maria Fuentes, the executive director of the Maine Better Transportation Association. We're talking about yesterday's special legislative session. In the studio in Augusta with us, Mal Leary, our senior political reporter. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Friends of Acadia. Members and volunteers preserving the splendor of Acadia National Park for current and future generations. Friendsofacadia.org.
Hello, I'm Jane Wales, host of World Affairs. Recent mass shootings in Gilroy, El Paso, and Dayton have once again forced a painful reckoning for Americans on this topic of racism and gun violence. Next on World Affairs, Max Fisher of the New York Times and Chelsea Parsons of the Center for American Progress join us to discuss what's behind the epidemic of gun violence in the U.S. and what lessons other countries might offer.
That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio. And tomorrow at 2 is Ideas from the CBC, Drug Use for Grown-Ups. Carl Hart, chair of the Department of Psychology at Columbia University, challenges our assumptions about drug use and argues that policies that restrict and punish drug use are fueling the drug crisis in Canada and the United States. That's coming up tomorrow at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, reaction to yesterday's special legislative session. Joining me from our Augusta studio, Maine Public's senior state house reporter, Mal Leary. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Mal, I have to ask you, is yesterday's opposition by Republicans to bond measures anything more than about spending? Is there some politics involved? Any interest in making the governor look bad?
I think that is a motive for some of the Republicans. We had a handful of Republicans who voted against a transportation bond. So, you have to wonder how each one is thinking and weighing how they're going to do. Let's face it, the Republicans are smarting. They went from having the Senate in their control and the governorship in their control to having no control. Both bodies controlled by the Democrats and the Democratic governor. So they're smarting from that. That has been a situation they haven't been in for several years.
All right. Well, joining us now by phone, Andrew McLean, Democrat representing District 27. He is in his fourth term and is chair of the Joint Standing Committee on Transportation. Representative McLean, thanks for giving us a call.
Good afternoon, Jennifer.
I want to talk to you about this idea of bonding as a way of funding transportation projects. We know that many in the legislature are uncomfortable with bonding generally. We heard Republicans say that they want to find a way to fund things in the general budget. What is your response? What do you think about bonding as a way to fund transportation priorities?
Well, first of all, let me just say that bonding is a good way to finance long-term projects. And so bonding in and of itself is not a bad thing. But when we come to over-rely on bonding, that's where we run into problems. For the last 6 or 7 years, we have bonded. We have put out a significant transportation bond, anywhere from $50 to $75 to $100 million for transportation. And we're doing that because the Department of Transportation in Maine does not have enough money to pay for the projects. So we're forced to bond every single year just to barely keep up with basic maintenance. So this can't be a long-term solution to our transportation funding problems. We have to find a long-term sustainable solution that doesn't require us to come in every summer to do a bond.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Representative Andrew McLean, who's chair of the Transportation Committee in the legislature. Calling in now, Heather Johnson, the Commissioner of Economic and Community Development. Hi, Commissioner Johnson.
Hi there, Jen.
What's your reaction to yesterday?
You know, certainly we're disappointed. We think there's a lot of support in the state for broadband specifically, and it's an infrastructure tool we need in order to continue to grow our economy and provide access to town hall services, education support, workforce training. So, you know, we're disappointed.
Now that that bond measure is not going to voters, is there a plan B for finding the money to expand broadband in Maine?
It's a much slower process. We continue to work with communities and providers. We're very fortunate in our state of a great provider community that wants to try to find solutions for these communities that continue to be unserved. So we'll continue to work with them. We'll continue to look for federal opportunities to attract federal funding. But certainly there's always a match component there, and we have a much smaller pool of money to utilize as match at this point. So it'll be a much slower path.
When you say much slower, what are we looking at?
Well, The bond was about $15 million, and what we will likely have to put in the marketplace in the next year will be something closer to $1.5 million.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in. That's Heather Johnson, the Commissioner of Economic and Community Development. Moving on to Chuck, calling from Palmyra. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead.
How are you today?
Good.
My reaction, you asked for a reaction. My reaction is that it's disappointing that the Republicans in the legislature wouldn't allow issues, important issues like Land for Maine's future and like the broadband issue that you were just discussing with the commissioner. Let those go forward and let the voters decide, particularly the Land for Maine's future, which I have particular interest in. Almost every time the voters have approved those when it's come to them. And so it's disappointing that the Republicans would basically deny the voters the opportunity to vote on that bond issue. And the same would be true for broadband for sure, and some of the others as well.
Thanks, Chuck. And Mal, let's talk about that, the idea that yesterday's decision was not a decision on whether or not to spend this money, but whether or not to put these bonds before the people.
Well, that's part of it, Jennifer. But the reality is this legislature, this governor, have got to come to grips with the long-term plan of how do you fund these needed projects. Now, what hasn't been mentioned here is this transportation bond is general fund money is being paid here. This is how far we've gotten from away from what's needed. The gas tax no longer provides anywhere near the amount of money needed to fix the roads, just to maintain the roads and do those necessary repairs. We've had to shift part of that to the general fund. So there's a commission that's underway that's looking at potential for transportation as to how to fund it in the future. The point is often made that we have vehicles now, hybrids, electric cars, that are not paying anything for the upkeep of the road, even though they're using them. So those are some tough issues that have to be addressed that haven't been addressed. And when you look at some of these bonds, one of the criticisms I've heard is, this is not a lot of money. Why are we borrowing for this? Our budget is close to $8 billion over the 2 years, and yet we're borrowing money to do things like modernize the National Guard facilities. $4 million. Now, of course, $4 million is a lot of money, except when you look at it relative to the entire state budget. So the question becomes, why aren't we using, as I think you heard Matt Moonen mention, if these bonds don't go forward, then there is money been set aside in the budget for debt service. Maybe we end up using some of that money set aside for debt service to actually fund these projects with cash instead of borrowing to pay for them.
All right. Well, Chuck, thank you for your call. We have an email here from Eric. Yesterday, Governor Mills called the Senate Republicans who blocked the bond issues sheep, which was way too kind. Mind you, they weren't voting on the bond issues themselves, just whether or not to put them on the ballot for Maine voters to decide on. And they wouldn't even do that. Voting to include bond issues on the ballots used to be routine. I can only conclude that they are either cowards, contemptuous of the voters, or a mixture of both. The LePage anti-spending virus has spread throughout the Republican Party in Maine, and the only cure is to elect Democrats and gain that two-thirds majority needed to override these contemptible, diseased Republicans. So clearly, Eric shares Governor Mills' frustration. But I want to ask you, Mal, what Eric says here. Voting to include bond issues on the ballots used to be routine. Is that true?
I wouldn't say it was routine, but it was commonplace. There have been bonds voted down by the voters, even though the legislature sent them out. There was one for corrections that went to the voters about 15, 20 years ago, and that was defeated by the voters. One for the University of Maine system was defeated by the voters. So it's not routine that just because the legislature says, hey, you know, we're sending this out for you to vote on, that the voters are actually going to vote for it. Now, in recent times, there have been, I think, a concerted effort by lawmakers from both parties to come up with bond packages that have broad support and they think that will pass. But you never know.
We have an email from Doug. And Mal, I'm sorry to put you on the spot if you don't know the answer to this. Doug wants to know, what is the value of the bonds that we are retiring? If you don't have the answer, maybe Henry Beck can respond in a quick tweet.
Well, Henry would know. I'm trying to remember from the floor debate. It's a significant amount of money, and it depends on how you look at what is owed. There's primary debt of the state that is the full faith and credit of the state is pledged to, but we also have some contingent debt. For example, the Government Facilities Authority that has built the courthouses around the state. That's not full faith and credit of the state, but it's still a contingent liability. So the amount of money that the state is in debt for depends on how you determine that total amount, how much you say is totally pledged by the state, and how much is simply a contingent liability if indeed one of these instrumentalities that give out bonds fails.
Mal, let me look forward to January when the legislature reconvenes. How does what happened yesterday affect what happens in January, both politically and as far as the functioning of the legislature and what they consider?
Oh, I think there's many factors when you talk about how the political climate's going to change in January. It always changes in the second regular session because it's an election year. Lawmakers are either up for election or they're working to find someone to fill their seat because they're term limited or they no longer want to serve. That's going on. Then you have people seeking higher public office. Classic example this time is Speaker Sarah Gideon is seeking the United States Senate seat. So all of those political dynamics come into play to make it more difficult for these political creatures called lawmakers to come to agreement on various issues. And some of the he promised, she promised arguments that we saw in this special session are going to come home to roost in January. Republicans very angry with Troy Jackson because at one point he said he wouldn't bring up ranked choice voting, and then he did. And he's angry back saying, look, they indicated they were going to support these bonds, and then they said they wouldn't. So he's angry with the Republicans because of that. And I think that's going to carry forward into January, and it's going to be politically a difficult session.
We have a tweet from Martin who says, glad the transportation bond passed, but longer term, we should put it in the budget. We'll be able to plan and schedule better and get better deals on materials. Why isn't it just in the budget, Mel?
Because there's not enough revenue to do that. Earlier in my career, there was no general fund money going in to the transportation projects. It was all generated by the gas tax, the fuel tax, if you will, on all the types of fuel that's used on the road and on some fees, and that paid for the whole thing. Now, there were bonds, but they were called transportation bonds because they were paid for by the revenues that came in from the gas tax and other sources of revenue. So in that sense, that's what we were doing not that long ago, and the world changes, technology changes, fuel efficiency changes. If you look back in the past, people were happy if they got 20 miles to a gallon, and now people are getting 40, 50, 60 miles to a gallon, and that means less money coming in from that gas tax. So to answer your question, in the past, that was pay-as-you-go, if you will, in the sense that the money for transportation came from a particular fund that's constitutionally protected called the Highway Fund.
Robin on Facebook writes, Republicans seem to be all about fiscal responsibility when they are not in the majority and happy to spend, spend, spend when they are in the majority. Borrowing when interest rates are so low for a project like rural broadband is a smart, forward-looking idea. Both my husband and I relocated to Maine in the past 3 years due to the availability of high-speed, reliable internet from our home. We both have high-paying jobs, working from our home offices, improving state and local tax coffers, and, of course, our local economy. Maine needs to be competitive in attracting high-wage jobs. Mal, every time we do a program about the future of Maine, about the future of Maine's economy, broadband is the number one topic. We heard Commissioner Johnson say everything will be slower now. Is there any alternative?
Well, there's one of the problems here is the changing technology makes it very difficult. You may have heard of 5G, which basically is high-speed internet service for your phone, where your phone actually becomes, which it is, of course, is a small computer, becomes a device that can access the internet just as well as your laptop or your desktop at home. We don't know exactly how that's going to play out. 5G is wireless, so that people in rural areas can get it more easily than they can the landline fiber optics or digital subscriber lines from the phone company or the cable modem access where you have to have a wire that comes into your house. We don't know how that's all going to play out. And that's one reason why when you do one of these bonds, they're not specifically saying how we're going to achieve greater access in rural Maine. They just want to provide some money to help do that through the state because the realization is coming and you talk to the business community, it's there. You know, broadband access is like having access to electricity, having access to roads. It is a basic fundamental infrastructure that the state of Maine has got to have. The question is how best to do it. And with the technology constantly changing, that is a very difficult decision to make.
Finally, Mal, you know, we've been talking about yesterday's special legislative session and bond measures that would have appeared on the November ballot, one of which will appear on the November ballot. There's going to be another ballot next June. It's called the primary. Will there be bond measures? Do you believe there will be bond measures when folks are voting in the presidential primaries?
I'm not sure there will be bond proposals ready for the presidential primary, which is March 3rd.
Oh, excuse me.
But you got to remember, we have a June primary for state races. And we will have a hotly contested, I believe, primary for the United States Senate. We may have some primary contests for the congressional seats. We don't know. It's far too early to see how those are going to shake out. Plus all of the local legislative races, primaries that will occur. So there's a lot of people go vote in that June primary. I think we will have some bonds on there. I think it'll be a difficult process as the legislature tries to go through and figure out which ones of these they will actually propose. But you heard the Republicans say during parts of the debate during the special session that, you know, some of these things can wait. We can wait and do them in January. We don't have to do them now. And we can put them on the ballot in June. So there seemed to be an indication there that on some of these issues, they will be willing to go along and vote for some bonds to go on the June ballot.
Thank you, Mal. Mal Leary is our Maine Public senior political reporter. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.